Hello, Journey to Midwifery podcast fans. I return this week with Pamela, who is a certified nurse midwife practicing in the Cleveland, Ohio area. She has practiced for 18 years, vast amount of experience and knowledge to share. She shares some resources available in Ohio, and we just have a great chat. So I hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome to the Journey to Midwifery podcast. This is a podcast for and about midwives. This is the place where midwives come to share their stories. I am your host, Amber Wilson, a midwife myself. I felt called to this journey of sharing the stories of midwives around the globe, and I hope that you will find as much joy listening as I do interviewing. Remember the quote, "Life is about the journey, not the destination." All right. Well, thank you, Pamela, for coming on the podcast, Journey to Midwifery. Give us an intro of who you are.
So I go by Pam or Pamela. I was just laughing because it seems like patients are calling me Pamela more in the last year or so. So I go by either one. So Pam Hetrick, I am a certified nurse midwife in Cleveland, Ohio. I serve as a full scope midwife and also the assistant director of midwifery for a large tertiary care center. And I've been out in the field for about 18 years, which is frightening to think about because I always would joke with providers, like when they would say like, "Oh, I delivered her when she was born." And I was like, "Wow, you're really old." And then I'm really at the point that, you know, from midwifery school, these babies that I caught are definitely of reproductive age and probably have had their babies. So I've not been told yet, but I'm sure when I do, it's going to be a box of tissues and a bottle of wine kind of night.
Yes. But the experience, you just have a wealth that you can share.
Yeah. Yeah. So. No, I've caught... I'm just about at 1,800 births that wow. I've caught. So yeah, there's going to be a party on a shift when I hit that number. So I celebrate every 100th birth. And then I'm not really sure what I'm going to do when I hit 2,000. It's going to have to be something magical.
Yes. I think maybe a vacation.
Right.
Yeah. So, okay. Take me all the way back to the beginning.
Okay.
What inspired you to go into the field of midwifery?
So I'll first start with when I graduated from nursing school back in 1994, jobs were super, super tight. So I kind of, not only were jobs tight when I graduated as a registered nurse, but also when I was first certified as a midwife in 2003, I remember logging into midwifejobs.com and there were three jobs. That's it for the whole United States. So back to when I was a nurse, I worked at another large facility that had just opened up a birthing unit, and I worked on palliative oncology. So I was one floor up, and there was probably like four people that I went to nursing school with that graduated a year ahead of me that were all working in birthing services. So I used to sneak down there and bring them. We had really good snacks on palliative. So I would bring them down, ice cream sandwiches and stuff. And they kept saying like, "You should work down here." And I'm like, "Yeah, whatever." Then all of a sudden I was like, "You know what? I should really work down there. Like, I'm getting tired of seeing people die all the time. I want to see birth." Right. So I started working in labor and delivery in February of 1996. And then all of a sudden I got to see midwives and I was like, "Wow, this is like such a good blend of like being a bedside nurse, but having more autonomy and, you know, control and decision-making." So I was kind of hooked, you know. I was like, well, they didn't talk about midwifery, but this is something that, you know, perked my interest a little bit. And I love taking care of the midwife patients. So fast forward, I have another baby and I go and work at the facility that I am at right now. and came back to work, had little kids at home, and I'm in a birth with a physician, and I had taken care of this extremely delightful patient all day long. And one of the things that I could say that I disliked about bedside nursing is you would be touched by these amazing families, and you wheel them up to postpartum and you're like, oh, I don't know how they're, you know what I mean? I have no continuity of care with them. Sometimes they would come back and remember you as their previous labor nurse, but I really wanted that long-term relationship with patients. So going back to this birth that we're about to do, and the physician that I was working with that day was always known as a little bit abrasive. And so I'm laughing and having such a good time with the family. And she like pauses and looks in the room and said, how old are you? And I like inside, I'm like, oh God, she's going to chastise me in front of this patient that I'm having too much fun and I'm not being professional. And so I turned around and I said, well, I don't know, how old do I look? And she goes, that's not the question. I want to know how old you are. And I said, I'm 30. And she said, you are not too late to go back to med school. And the first thing that flashed in my mind was absolutely hell no. Because I watched the residents and how hard they worked during their residency. And I had absolutely zero desire to do any kind of surgery, anything that a patient, like still when they say hour that hurts, I'm always like, oh, I'm so sorry. You know, I mean, the thought of cutting somebody really bothered me. So I said, no, I can't do that. And she's like, well, why don't you think about something advanced practice wise, like women's health nurse practitioner, midwife. And I was like, you know what? I think I'm ready for that. And I think that I needed that moment of somebody saying, you could do more than what you're doing now. So I left work. I met my husband out for dinner and I said, hey, you know, I'm going to say something real crazy here, but I think I want to go back and be a midwife. And he was like, super supportive. I mean, whatever you need to do. So I entered midwifery school. I took the 3-year route because again, I had little kids at home, and I graduated, and it took about 6-7 months to land a job just because jobs were not plentiful. And I have had a long career rewarding of taking care of moderate to high risk, not only medically, but socially disadvantaged individuals. And then I had a 7-year stint in a private practice building a midwifery program from the ground up. And now I'm back at the tertiary care center. So I can just say it's been fun. There's never a dull moment. As everybody listening that's in midwifery probably knows, you know, you can switch gears to somebody who is socially very needy to somebody who's medically complex, and individualizing care for birthing people, for just people.
So where did you go to school?
So I attended Case Western Reserve in Cleveland. Francis Payne Bolton, we'll give that little lady a little shout out here. So that's where I finished my master's degree. And then I'm just going to throw in, because I can't believe that I did this, I'm one class away from my MBA.
Wow.
Yeah. So I don't know what the heck I'm going to run and use all this business for, but as of the end of April, I have my MBA too.
Congratulations.
Thank you. There was a lot of tears, especially with statistics and finance. I was like, I signed up for this. I just like taking care of people, not numbers.
Statistics is the worst. Yeah. I think that's all of our enemy. Yeah. So is that school still a midwifery school?
For the MBA?
So does the school you went to still have a midwifery program?
Yes, they actually have moved their building a little bit more central in Cleveland, but they do have a midwifery school, yes.
Okay. And obviously at the time it was in class, you probably don't, do you know now? Are they hybrid?
They're doing a little bit of hybrid only because of COVID, but it is a brick and mortar location, and that's how it was Case heavily does a lot of the non-core curriculum, like midwifery courses, are done in intensive format. I think actually when I was graduating that they offered one course as like a beta for long commutes, because Case was getting at that point, people who went to Frontier, Case was the ones who were giving them their MSN. So they were trying a couple different things so people didn't have to travel. So I was in the beta group in pharmacology for, you know, like a I don't want to say telehealth because that's all we do now, but
right.
You know, a hybrid. Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah. Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
You paved the way a little bit.
Yeah.
So what, I guess I would say, like, lots of people like to know practice questions, like schedule wise. So you're in charge now, but what is your schedule look like?
So I'll give you what my schedule looks like, and then I'll give you what a typical midwife, a full-time midwife, looks like. So at our facility, we have a 1.0 FTE, would do 3 office shifts per week, and then a 12-hour call per week. We do not, at our facility, we do not do 24s anymore because we didn't feel that it was safe with the volume that we were seeing and keeping up with. For me, I get a day and a half of administrative time. And sometimes it's not enough. And I do a lot of stuff at night, but that's okay. I really, really enjoy it. And I feel like part of being a good leader is understanding that not everything happens between 9 and 5. And we, you know, we have some midwives who just work night shift. So I try to make myself available to them. But yeah, I see patients in the office 2.5 days a week. And then I actually will take call as needed, but I cover the triage unit on Tuesdays from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. So that's going back to when I was a nurse before I decided to go to midwifery school. At the same facility, I was the full-time night shift triage nurse. So I just kind of feel like, wow, now I'm the triage midwife, and
yeah,
you know, full circle here.
You did. Yeah, that is cool. Yeah. How big is your team of midwives?
So currently when we're up to full complement, we have 15 midwives and 2 nurse practitioners in Cleveland. We are going through, the facility that I work for is going through major expansion. So we're opening up a new East Side location. So we're going to need midwives for that location. Mm-hmm. Also our West Side location has a lot of midwives that are at the end of their career. So now we have to start planning for retirements. There's a lot of growth in Cleveland, the other major healthcare facility. Those midwives were around when I was a baby nurse on labor and delivery. So they're, you know, 25, 30 years in the profession. So, you know, the tides are turning here in Cleveland that we really need young, energetic midwives.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah.
So on that note, leads me to my next question. I understand that salary can vary for various reasons, but could you provide like a general, what a new graduate might expect for salary?
Yep. So new grads, we usually bring in with, you know, zero experience at about $98,000
a year. That's pretty good.
Yeah. And, you know, the one great thing is because we cover so many areas of the hospital, there is incentive pay when you do above and beyond, or if somebody calls off sick or there's a vacation, there's always opportunity to make a little bit more money. Also, because we're a teaching institution, we do provide coverage on the weekends as a part of the team with the residents. So there is a little bit of financial incentive there too. So there's definitely ways to make more money. It's just what you want to do. Some people are totally happy with, you know, working 3 days in the office and an extra call, or I'm sorry, in a call day. There's also incentive if you want to open up another office schedule. So there's some people that are like, I'm good. I have a little one at home, or what shifts you got.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm the wheeler and the dealer. Like, I can't rest until the whole schedule's done. So it's fun because you make people's day when you throw them a little bit of extra money that, you know, that they want.
Yeah. That's a busy schedule with lots of gears.
Yeah, because we cover, I think it's 5 different offices too. So it's really like a big jigsaw puzzle.
Yeah.
Where we start to put stuff together. We do centering pregnancy. So there's a lot of moving parts on a schedule.
What's your birth volume like per month?
Birth volume per month, we're probably doing about 90 to 100 a month.
Yeah, that's a good amount.
Right.
Not too crazy.
I think so.
Yeah. Do you take new grads? I assume you do, since you talk about a new salary.
Yeah, we do take new grads. I mean, okay. We have like really hit it out of the park with the last couple new grads that we have hired. They are just so energetic and so ready to learn. Mm-hmm. That, you know, the part that's interesting is when we did a ACNM job board post, we had some people with experience that applied and that we interviewed, and our midwifery team, when it came to the team interview, they preferred the energy of the new grads versus somebody who is experienced, which I was like, wow, you know, that speaks volumes that they know that they have to put more effort and energy into orientation, but they chose the new grad over somebody who had like 20 years experience.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
But you have, sounds like, such seasoned midwives that what a great opportunity for the new grad to learn from.
Yeah. There's probably 5 of us that have been practicing for 15 or greater years. And then the rest are, we're a little bit bottom heavy now with new learners, we'll say, mm-hmm. people that have been out for less than 5 years. So, but we always try to mentor very well and be approachable for questions, which I think is huge.
Yeah. When they are in hospital, what is the doctor support while you're there?
So we have a primary collaborating physician that we do a case review with, but there's always 2 physicians, 2 attendings on the floor at any given time. Plus we have the chief resident. We're constantly surrounded by other learners. So if we need to collaborate or have them co-manage something, they're readily available for us.
Okay. Do you all take part in teaching residents? I've met, you know, various people all over that sometimes the midwives will do, maybe the first year residents or things like that. Do you all do that?
So we're trying to stand firm. And I think that the new residency director sees the value in having the intern come with us inpatient wise. We do have 2 midwives that are hospitalists. So they do 312s. On labor and delivery, and they are both excellent educators. So typically it's myself and another midwife. We have a intern with us in the office on Mondays. So they're with us and it's a lot of fun. And I think it gains a really good trust. And both myself and the midwife who takes the residents on Mondays, we were able to participate in resident interviews for the class that's gonna be announced in March. And I was really shocked how many of them said, tell us about your midwife program. Tell us about what you do with the residents. I mean, they were really, really interested in what we can offer them teaching wise. And I think it's really important because those baby doctors are going to come out and go into a community and they need to be good collaborators. They need to understand what midwives can and can't do. And, you know, when we're asking for help, we need help.
Yeah. What a great environment, really. It sounds like good work-life balance. You're not doing 60 plus hours a week unless you want to. Right. And you have the availability to collaborate with other specialties and open their insight into midwifery care.
Right. And you know what? We, you know, when we're on the floor, if the ORs are running wild, or, you know, with COVID, we've had, you know, that our attendings are going over to ICU to deal with a patient with COVID, you know, the midwives are relied upon to, hey, you know, I'm not going to be able to be down here. If this patient, you know, births, can you go in and staff this with the resident, or can you do this birth? So, you know, it's a good working relationship that we truly rely on each other.
Yeah. What are the legality implications with CNMs in your state? Do you have to have a supervising physician or not, et cetera?
So we have to have a collaborator, and we have to have something. And if any Ohio midwife is listening to this, these three letters are like nail on the chalkboard for us. Nails on the chalkboard is the SCA standard care arrangement. And that's what Ohio Board of Nursing requires us to have in order to practice.
Okay. So I know in some states there's a difference between collaborating and consulting. Mm-hmm. So collaboration tends to be a little more strict, right?
Well, we do have guidelines of what they say. This okay. is what should take care of, should not take care of, should collaborate with. So we're working hard. Ohio Association of Advanced Practice Nurses really does a good job. You know, we had a bill for independent practice. It fizzled out and didn't do quite well. So now the push is just to get rid of this standard care arrangement. And I always tell our docs, yeah, there's a lot of different APN practices that can definitely practice independently, right? They're going to see patients in the office if it's an FNP and they feel like the patient needs a higher level of care, they send them to the emergency room. But with midwives, we all know that there is a lot of things that we just can't do, like sections and vacuums. And so our relationship with physicians has to be as strong now or whether that SCA goes away, because we absolutely need them.
Right. It's by nature of the job. Correct. That's why I, to be honest, do not understand these agreements, because we just have to. It's right. going to happen. Why do you have to have? Yeah, it baffles me.
I always say there's not going to be a bunch of rogue midwives running around Ohio, you know, burning the SCA. I mean, we all know, especially for the hospital midwives, that, you know, we have to have good relationships.
Yeah. Is it any kind of barrier to home birth practicing midwives?
So fresh off the presses in especially the Cleveland area, we have had since January 1st. So what are we at the 10th now? Mm-hmm. We've had four CNMs open up home birth practices.
Wow.
I'm not quite sure who they got as their collaborator, but mm-hmm. that's something that I don't have to worry about. there's a lot of legalities in Ohio when it comes to home birth. And in Ohio, the only quote unquote midwife that is recognized in the state is a certified nurse midwife.
Okay.
So anybody else that's practicing, as the word midwife is not regulated mm-hmm. in the state of Ohio. So at least the midwives, the CNMs that are taking care of patients at home, not only will be able to, the nice part is see the patient throughout their whole pregnancy and do the labs and the ultrasounds. It'll give a little bit more continuity of care.
Yeah, for sure. Do you have like one physician can supervise however many, 4, 5, 6?
I think it's one, you know what, they just changed it with the last revision. And so I want to say it's got to be, if it's a department chair that signs, they're allowed to have more than a single collaborator.
Okay. Yeah. Well, good for your community. Yeah. It's good they have options.
Yeah, they That's have a nice. Lot of options now.
Yeah. Do you feel like the, I guess these people are new, so maybe the answer is hard to say, but in the past, do you feel like the transfer relationship is good? Is it bumpy?
It's both.
Yeah.
You know, when I worked at our community hospital, we knew patients who were planning a home birth. So, you know, we would tell the patients, as long as you fit in midwife care, that you can do whatever you want to, right? We don't have laws that say you can't birth or die in your home. So I can't control where the patient's going to go when she goes into labor. But the biggest thing is that we wanted patients to know is we cannot provide consultative services to your home birth provider. But as long as the patient was a quote unquote active member of our practice and that we were regularly seeing them, if transfer needed to happen, if the patient said, this is going on or I can't do this anymore, then they came into midwife care at our facility. It's very similar like that for the larger tertiary care center that I'm at now, but that is probably going to change when it's CNMs caring for the patient. So that's stuff that we need to iron out as to who will manage the patient if they came in for pain management or, you know, needed augmentation. I mean, obviously, no matter who's managing what, if a patient comes in with a, you know, persistent category 2 or 3, of course, a physician is going to manage the care.
Right. Yeah. And I guess presumably, like if these CNMs decide to get hospital privileges, et cetera, things like that.
That's going to be a little bit more difficult because you have to have a standard care arrangement for a physician who is on staff at that hospital.
So gotcha.
There's more, you know, there's more to come. Baby yeah. steps here for
Baby
sure.
steps.
Yeah. Baby steps. Yep.
Yeah. So questions about you in your 18 years, do you have any like peak moments of your career where you said, you know, I really like this time as far as schedule or where you were working, something like that?
Wow.
Well, it's a thinker.
It's a hard one. Cause you know, like back in the day when I was much younger, I would do a 24-hour on Tuesday. And I was like, woohoo, I'm done, you know, but that was when we had a smaller midwifery service. So now I can't imagine, I mean, the acuity and the volume that we see now, I can't imagine 24s. Do I love it now in my administrative role that I've not gotten out of bed for a page or a birth since April of 2021? Yeah, I'm like, yeah. Wow, this is what normal people feel like. So the consistency, you know, definitely as I have aged, the consistency in my schedule has been amazing. But, you know, I kind of roll with the punches. You know, if I needed to go in and do a night, would I say absolutely not? No, I would absolutely do it if that's what, you know, the patient needs. But yeah, I do like my bed now.
Yeah. So it sounds like your career has aged / grown well with you.
Right.
Right.
Yep. And it's funny because I look at the younger midwives in our group and they're like, well, GYN. And I'm like, oh my God, like 3/4 of my schedule is GYN because as you age, so do your patients.
Right. Yeah.
And I hated menopause. And now it's like, okay, give me all the menopause people. These are, you know, these are my people that have followed me for so long. So, I mean, it's an area. I kind of feel like a new mom when babies start sitting up and you're like, oh my gosh, I love this stage. They're so much fun. And then they start to walk a little bit and you're like, this stage is amazing too. So, you know, I still enjoy taking care of pregnant patients. Of course, that's why I'm a midwife, but I do like more of my GYN complex issues because it makes me feel like I'm still learning a ton every time I have to use my brain.
Yeah. I have heard that so often from many midwives that stage where you're like, I love menopause and
yep.
You know, that's great. Cause yeah, definitely. I think just even from my perspective, when you first get into it, you're like, I want OB. Well, some,
absolutely.
And then you progress as things go along.
Yep. I agree.
So I know we had talked about this offline, but a good, like, you've been in your community for a long time. What resources, sources or resource is available to either you all as midwives or your patients in the Cleveland area?
Oh boy, there are so many resources for patients. You know, the joy of social media really has evolved. We have on the east side of Cleveland, am I allowed to put a plug in for play? Okay, so Mother Rising is a community-based education and doula services, but they do a lot with birth circles and different topics. And one of the co-owners is now in, she's a therapist, licensed therapist. And so it's really nice to be able to have that trust and know that when you send patients to their center, that they're going to get really good evidence-based information to the patient. Cause I think that that's super important, is that your educators are knowing what's going on in facilities and giving patients accurate information of what it's going to look like to have a baby in a hospital with a midwife. So West Side location, they have centers like that too. For midwives, I know our facility, we have a mentorship for newer midwives just so they feel supported. American College of Nurse Midwives, we were kind of the last affiliate, as they call us, that we were still broken down into regions for the state. They didn't go to an affiliate status or level initially. So there was a lot. I want to say 2010 to 2014. And maybe even after that, I started to not go to the meetings just because I was on call so much. But it was just a great place for, they always had, you know, a CEU offering and just a lot of companionship and empathetic conversations that you're having, pushing, elevating us to the next level with benchmarking, things like that. So now that it's gone to the state level, I think that I know that we're still doing a yearly conference, but I'm not sure what they're doing in between with meetings and how you make that connection happen.
Yeah, because those meetings are always great for especially students or newer midwives to really be involved.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. I assume they can just get hooked up and find out what, where, when these things are.
Right. Yeah. It's on the website for the state of Ohio.
Okay. Yeah. Those are good resources. I'm trying to, as I mentioned, you know, find out what's available in each community. So plugs are fantastic.
Right.
Because people need to know, or even if it was a midwife that was going to practice in your community, it helps them, you know, I'm a new transient myself. And so it's trying to figure out what is available in your community. So just trying to grow that.
Helpful, I will say that when I was practicing in the community and we'd have, you know, somebody that I'm thinking about that was a doula, and I don't remember where she was from, but she moved to Ohio and she's like, I need to find my people. I'm like, oh, you just need to go to Mother Rising. You know what I mean? Like those are your people. So it's really quite nice. And especially, you know, birth circle is so powerful for so many people. And I would encourage a lot of patients to go when they were pregnant too, because we all know the way that we envision birth, no matter if it's our first baby or ninth baby, oh, it's all so different. So I think it's good for them to kind of set up their expectations to decrease the old postpartum overwhelmed feeling and depression. But again, they have a ton of postpartum doulas too. So lots of good stuff.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So what is a resource or app or book or something that you use? You've been in practice for a long time. You probably have a lot of answers, but you know, maybe one or two or three.
Okay. So I'll give you, you know, Ohio Association of Advanced Practice Nurses. Absolutely, because they are our legislative powerhouse of the state. And, you know, they do send out updates that are relevant to our practice. I know that this is not going to be a favorite answer, but I do really enjoy my ACOG membership. I get an update every single day of stuff that is super, super pertinent. And I get the Green Journal, which I sit there and read, and their website is amazing. I just wish I could say that our major governing body did the same with not as much fluff in their updates and more meat and potatoes of what we need to know to elevate ourselves. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for nodding, because sometimes I get like the stink eye, like you're not an ACNM member. And I said, no, I dropped my membership for a little bit and I'm just going to try out ACOG. And I can say they do a really, really good job.
I would say you're definitely not alone. I mean, you know, everybody's on one side of the field or another, but you're not alone.
Yeah.
And okay. We just have to do we feel is best to help us practice the best we can and the safest we can.
Yeah. And I think I tend to, you know, use my online ACOG resource, and I am an AWON member too. I tend to use those websites more because I can get the information quicker and it's more concise, and I just like the layout of it. So
they do. ACOG has a really good layout, I would say. I love that you can just, you know, search it and find what you need.
And you have a lot of patient resources too.
Like that.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm just not as good at looking on ACNM. I don't know. Yeah. That's just where I am too.
I'll become a member this year, but I have to give a plug where plugs are due. And that's, you know, definitely, I feel like I get a good value.
And I asked you what you used.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Not what everybody uses. So
right.
That's your answer.
Yep.
So that's good. Those are good tips. Now advice. That's your deep thought moment. Do you have advice for aspiring or new midwives after all your years?
Okay. This is what my advice is. Is that one of the midwives who practiced when I first found out about midwifery, she used to say something all the time. And at first I was like, well, yeah. And yes, I agree that every person deserves a midwife, but we also have to be very cautious. Here's my expert witnessing coming out. We do have to be very careful with how we counsel patients. Yes, we are all about shared decision-making, but I would say you really need to document well the conversation with shared decision-making, risk benefits, alternatives. We can't force somebody to have an IV. We can't force somebody to do a glucose test. And my old practice partner, she was a lot softer than I was. And I used to say to her, you know what? You're absolutely right. If they don't want to do a, you know, glucose testing, whether it's the 50 gram load or an organic load or four time a day sugar testing, that's fine. But they then risk out of midwifery care. And at first she would kind of look at me and I'm like, our guidelines say that we don't take care of uncontrolled diabetics. And until we can see that she isn't an uncontrolled diabetic. And so it puts, you know, it's not that you're threatening the patient. You know, sometimes you'll hear that you're threatening the patient that she has to have a doctor. No, I'm not threatening the patient. However, I have a board to report to, and I have guidelines that I have to follow. And so again, it's a choice. I can take care of you, but this is what I can take care of. So I think it's holding your ground. And I don't want to say not having the patient run the prenatal care, but I think when you sit down and you talk to a patient and you explain everything to them and they have that moment and they know what their options are, they usually are going to choose to stay with you because they've bonded to you. But I would say definitely for newer or aspiring midwives, you know, really honing in on adequate documentation, thinking of the big picture of things. You know, the one thing that we know midwives are really, really good at is assessing risks. And so when you find, you know, I told a midwife last week, you know, when we were talking about what do you do for case management, I said, listen, if there is a pieces part of the body that doesn't include tonsils, adenoids, a gallbladder, and appendix, that's something that you need to consult for. Just that you had a collaborative, you know, you had a collaborative report with the with your collaborating physician that said, you know, she had, like a partial bowel obstruction, just so it's charted and that it looks like the communication's flowing and that you're following your guidelines and your backup doc is aware. That's all anybody can ask for. And I can say as an expert witness, I appreciate it so much when, you know, it's much easier for me to say, I absolutely can defend this nurse or this midwife because they followed what they were supposed to do. They followed the standard of care and they gave the patient really good care. And I can tell because they've documented it very well.
Yeah. Wow. That's a, what's the word I'm looking for? A neat role.
Oh, it's yes. It's, a part of my MBA. I am launching a program called the Expert Witness Institute, which is an online 6-hour, I'm hoping for 6 hours of CEUs that is going to teach other people how to become an expert witness because we need people. We absolutely need, I get the phone calls that I get of attorneys looking for people who can review is high, unfortunately. You know, we see it's very strange. I've been doing it as I started out doing it as a nurse 18 years ago, and it comes in little, like I'll get 3 shoulder dystocia cases and then you'll get 3 hemorrhage cases. And then
it's threes.
It's the threes, HIE. It's like, oh my gosh, like I have to sometimes keep it completely separated. But I feel that every time I review, it makes me a stronger clinician. And it also teaches me different ways in documenting something or why'd she put that in there? Or, oh, I wish they would have done this. So, you know, it's a really good learning experience too.
Yeah. Do you ever feel like almost a sense of guilt when you say, they should have done this? I feel like I would feel that way. That's why I'm asking.
Sometimes you do, but sometimes it like hurts my soul that we have people out there as CNMs that like are really missing the big picture of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and so it makes me want to do it more because I'm like, we need strong, confident people in this profession. And so it makes you want to take that student or that new grad and whip them into shape and be like, listen, you know, Sergeant Hetrick here, you know, when you're done with me, you know, and I always tell them, my job is to make sure that I never see your name on a piece of paper that's crossing through. So I want you to know what you need to know.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I like that. When is that course coming out? Do you have a timeline?
So my film guy was here last night. We filmed the first 2 modules and he wants to do 2 more tomorrow night, but I'm like, listen, I've been up a couple nights late. I need my 8:30 bedtime. So I'm going to try to do the other 3 next week. So I'm hoping with CEUs and everything that this program launches March 1st.
Okay. How do we find it?
Expert Witness Program. If you go to that website, everything is going to be right now. It's a little bit bare bones website, but all of the content will be loaded in there with the packages that you can do. You can do just the modules only. There is some mentorship that's available in there and then one-on-one guidance. So I, the course is really for any medical professional. Of course, yes, I know OB like the back of my hand, but I get calls I have a friend who works at an attorney's office. He's like, do you know anybody who works same day surgery? I'm like, yeah, I do. Okay, can I have their name and number? I mean, you know, nursing homes, ICU, ER, same day surgery, urgent cares. There's a need for people to review and opine on the care that the patient received.
Do you get paid to be an expert witness?
Yes. Okay. Yes. It is a nice bit of mad money for the, you know, and it's hard. It's very hard to predict how busy you're going to be. The other thing is, thank you, COVID, for pushing back a lot of cases that were due over this past 2 years to go to trial, and they just keep getting pushed back. So the year that everybody goes to trial, I will be taking a nice vacation somewhere. But the other thing that you have to remember, this is all money that is not taxed. So you, you also have to be willing and ready to take a lot of Malox before you go see your tax advisor to say how much you're going to pay.
So you definitely want to set aside like a third or something. Set aside, like that.
Or, you know, I always have extra money taken out of my paycheck just for federal and state. So there's ways around it.
Yeah, that's really cool. I always wondered how you became that. So that's really good.
And you know, to go back, when I had graduated from midwifery school, I worked in our hospital's research department, and there was a midwife who just stopped doing births. So she wasn't active in that portion of midwifery. And she looked at me and said, hey, do you want to review this case? And I'm like, I have no freaking clue what I'm doing. And she's like, well, yeah, you do. And she's like, but I'm going to give you all my stuff. I'll walk you through that. And so from the beginning, I had this amazing mentor that was like, okay, now you have to draft this up, do this. And so, you know, as the years have passed, people will say to me like, well, how did you get into it? I want to do it. And I'm like, you know, how did you learn this? And I was like, oh, I had an amazing person that walked me through it. So that's what I'm hoping to do, is to be able to be that person to walk somebody through their first case or cases to kind of give them a little bit of support and mentorship that it's needed, and you can do it.
And this can be anybody. Like, could it be an experienced L&D nurse that could do it?
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. Yep.
That's cool.
Yeah. As long as you can, you would say that like you're a leader in your profession, like you're somebody who orients or educates. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like a fetal monitor instructor. Yeah.
Biggest thing is, if you've ever been arrested, you can't, or license suspended, revoked, they don't like.
That makes sense. They would probably question your credibility.
Correct. Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, all right, Pamela, I know your time's ending. So any last few things, or are you good?
I am going to say this as I end, to midwives all over that are listening to this. Thank you for the hard work that you do for pregnant people and babies all over the place. We know that we do provide excellent care. And I will say, always trust your gut. If your gut is telling you something's not right with the patient, never worry alone. Call another midwife that you work with, or go and find the collaborator. And, you know, you'd never have to worry alone. There's always somebody out there for you that can reassure you that you're doing the right thing, or something else needs to be done for the patient.
Never worry alone. And like, I always say, I won't swim upstream alone. I'll call you.
Yep, exactly. Yep. Never worry alone. We're a phone call away.
Yeah. I love that. Well, thank you, Pamela.
Oh, thank you. It was nice talking to you.
You too.
Well, that's a wrap for the first podcast episode of 2022. I have a few more scheduled for January and February, and I'm looking for March interviewees very soon. So I do have a little bit of a waiting list, but please keep sending me your recommendations. I store them and save them and reach back out when my schedule allows. So I appreciate you returning week after week and sending me those great emails with things you love and questions that you like me asking. All of that feedback is great because I'm here for you to record these episodes for you all. So, until next time.